This is where rich old ladies come to buy their stuff.
All right.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking to comedian John Dick Winters. He is out of towner, came in just for a comedy tour, and we talk about all sorts of great stuff.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Tim Wick.
After this podcast, I'm getting groceries.
We are actually recording in the community room of the Uptown Lunds because we have a very special out-of-town guest with us. His name is John Dick Winters. Hello, John.
Hey, thanks for having me.
He's from Pittsburgh. He's a comedian and actually reached out to us and we saw his stuff and he's like kind of awesome. So we wanted him to be on our show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The 5 minutes we saw were hilarious.
Yeah.
We can't speak to any of the rest
of it. He's got a tight five.
That's all I need for a sitcom if
yeah.
It was the 80s.
We're here just mostly kind of find out about you and you came to atheism in the way that a lot of people do, just, you know, long meandering road, right? I'm guessing like,
No.
Straight
not,
path.
Not a long meandering road at all.
Exciting.
I didn't grow up in a particularly religious family. I grew up in a family that had a very vague concept of God.
Okay.
The kind of people like said prayer, like that said, prayed before meals at Christmas.
Oh, only. Sure.
Like, just like yeah. out of like just a tradition that didn't really exist. And so God was never a huge part of my life. And then I was like 10, 11, 12. I was like, this doesn't seem right. And then I got my first Bad Religion record. I'm like, oh no, I'm an atheist now.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I was already pretty much an atheist, but then,
yeah.
I, was like, then I heard someone else say, yeah. like, yeah,
that's the thing.
I will believe in God when one and one are five.
Yeah. So, like, was the Christmas thing, you think, like, to please a grandparent, or was there some...
No, it was just generic Christianity. That's
yeah.
all.
More tradition than religion.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't even say it was to please an elder, because I don't even remember that being the case.
I
just think my mother and father would just... apathetic people when it came to this particular thing, but they were both raised religious because, you know, because of the 50s and the 60s.
Well, yeah, because yeah. America.
That's how it was. And so, like, that was their, like, very vague effort of, like, raising their
that's
children
super,
with religion.
That's
you know,
super
never
cool.
been to church ever. Well, I mean, not ever in my life, but as a child, never once.
Yeah. Did you talk to your parents since, like, deciding, like, atheism is what I am, and like have you ever
I mean,
come up?
It's not really ever come up in some type of deep conversation. I know my father kind of found religion later in his life. Both my parents are deceased, and my mother thought I was just copying my brother. And when she told me that's when I found out my brother was an atheist. Had no idea. She's like, "You're just copying." And my brother's 9 years older than me, so like we had like a huge generational
gap.
She's like, "You're just copying your brother." I'm like, "Chris is atheist." I didn't even know.
Cool, thanks, Mom.
And then so she was just bummed about that, just again because she was raised religious but didn't really have any real beliefs herself. And then my father was a lot more laid back. He was not particularly interested in what anyone else believed, which I was kind of respected.
Yeah. So when we were talking before they started the show, you said you had twin daughters,
mm-hmm.
right, the 14.
Yeah.
And you said they were raised evangelical.
Yeah.
So how did that happen when you were raised with no religion?
Well, their mother, my ex-wife, was raised evangelical, and when her and I got together, she was still Christian, but she was evolving to be a lot more liberal in her Christianity and liberal in her beliefs in general. And basically, our daughters are like 2 years old, and their grandparents offered to take them every Saturday so they could take them to church. And I'm like 20, I'm like 22 years old. I'm like, yeah, absolutely do
right?
that.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Every Saturday? No, you can have them. There was a point where I was like, it bothered me. It did, because I know they're going to be going to church, but I also know what church is like for kids. It's just playing games.
Right.
It's just completely social. And then
it's just
like,
subterfuge.
Color in the cross around the Jesus.
Yeah. So yeah, they went to church every Sunday for years with their grandparents. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Was that at odds, did you feel like, with your parenting? Like when you would, I don't know, hang out, or did they start to
believe in that? I had a pretty strong idea that I never wanted to push what I believed on my kids. Because that's one of the main problems with religion in general, is that they're not really beliefs. You're just raised with them.
Totally.
Indoctrination.
Yeah, it's indoctrination. It's not unlike racism or hate. You just raised with it. You raised wrong, and that's what you believe.
Yep.
So I didn't care what my daughters would end up believing. I just didn't want them to believe necessarily what they were taught to believe. All I wanted were children who could make a decision.
Choices available.
Yeah,
and
that's all I ever wanted as a father. And they knew where I was stood. It would come up in conversation. I was never intense about it. They just knew that I was atheist and I didn't mm-hmm. believe in God. And their mother was this, and their grandparents were a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like a couple of years ago. No, not even a couple of years, like maybe 18 months ago, they both were, it just came up casually in conversation again, and they were both like, oh yeah, we totally don't believe in God anymore.
Same, around the same age that you, started to put it together, too.
Yeah, and they have, this group of friends, and they're going to high school, for Christ's sakes. And they have this group of friends that are kind of like the radical kids, the progressive kids, they have all, the punk parents. And my daughter identifies as part of the LGBTQ community, and she's found this, really cool circle of, queer friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, a lot of her friends were raised atheists. And so, it just kind of, because she's being her friends are being raised by similar people like myself. I think that just kind of found it in their friend circle. It's just they naturally went to these people, which is interesting.
Well, and generally religion doesn't hold up to much scrutiny. So if you've got people who are kids, especially who are clever, curious,
mm-hmm.
They're self thinkers and stuff. They're gonna find a way to poke holes.
Just
seems like that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Think of that. I mean, at that age, they're trying to poke holes in everything.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. And
it's like they distrust every authority figure, and there's nothing more of a, hardly anything has more authority figures than religion.
Yeah. They're trying to poke holes in religion and authority and condoms and just like everything.
Yeah. Poke a hole in anything that moves.
I do not miss it.
This is a confusing and infuriating time.
Geeks Without God does not endorse poking holes in 14-year-olds. I'm just gonna
or condoms, honestly.
Yeah,
what
really
are you doing?
See,
if
you paid for the condom, use it the right way. I mean, what the hell?
Fucking point.
There's already a hole on one end. What I don't even understand.
There are needy, fertile people out there who need those condoms.
Yeah.
It's like cleaning your plate.
Yeah,
it's important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you do stand up.
I do.
Yeah. How long have you been doing stand up?
Not quite 6 years.
Awesome.
Approaching 6 years.
What got you into it? What was the thing that made you start doing it?
A severe need of self-importance. And, I think this is a question that's always asked, and the generic answer is I love stand-up, and I want to do stand-up. I think the deeper answer is that I was always really – I think comedians, specifically Carlin, but several comedians had probably more single influence on me as a person than any other influence, any other band or any other book, just whatever reason. People – are spoken to in different ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's an author or a teacher or whatever. It was just always stand up to me. When I was a kid, I don't know what it was. I just thought it was the best thing that I've ever seen. And so I eventually just got over my stage fright and started doing it. But there's always the jokes that comedians are self-absorbed and narcissistic, and there's probably some truth to that. But mostly it's just a lot of fun to make people laugh. It's really great.
Yeah, I think that, and stand-up is such its own animal too, compared to other forms of comedy, people are always improv is this, and comedic acting is this, but I think I've always felt, because I've tried a little stand-up, kind of tried everything, and stand-up's the only thing that ever made me feel terrified.
You're definitely right in that they're all their own animal, and stand-up is its own animal just in the idea of performance art in general, because stand-up, unlike other things like sketch or acting or improv or music or whatever, is the only one that I'm aware of that regardless of how good you are or aren't at it, you have to practice in front of a live audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think that's always I think that more than anything else is the one huge difference, because it takes a lot of resilience to go up night after night and literally fail in public over and over and over again until you learn how to do this thing. And I think that's the one thing that really sets stand-up aside than any other thing.
Yeah, I think that – oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I think that for me, one of the scariest things is, so like in improv, I'm not being Molly on stage. I'm being a bunch of different fucking characters. Yeah. I'm doing all this stuff. Same with sketch. But like with stand-up, it's me.
Yeah.
And it's me. And in the best stand-up, usually you're talking about something personal, or at least something, you know, that's your take on things.
Well, no matter what you're talking about, it's your own idea.
Exactly.
Unless you're really hacky.
Exactly.
But for most part, it's your own idea. And the difference, again, between stand-up and those two that you mentioned, sketch and especially improv has a built-in support system.
Mm-hmm.
With the people you're doing improv from, it's part of their I'll call it a Ponzi scheme. It's to keep you coming back and paying for classes. You're doing great. Like, I'm not saying it's always completely insincere, but I don't think it's healthy.
Classes are definitely a thing. That's a whole
theaters pay for themselves, kind of.
Like, when I was in Chicago and I went to Improv Olympic and took a class, and it was like, if you ever want to perform with us, if you ever want to audition to be in our show,
you have to
have taken like 10 of these fucking classes, which each cost $450.
Yep.
It's like, hold up, how come I can't just audition? I've already been a professional improv comedian. They're like, you haven't been our style or whatever. And that to me is the scheme.
Yeah, that's
sometimes
something that I'll never remedy with. As far as like, I mean, I don't particularly find improv funny, but a lot of people don't. Although when it's done well, it's fucking pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But as an art, I have all the respect for it in the world. As a business and as an ethical practice, I think it's horrible. I think it's dog
shit. I hate practicing improv without an audience. I just feel like it's like daycare play pretend time.
Totally.
I don't know. I don't feel like a fool when I'm making a fool of myself on stage in front of people. I've done improv on stage and bombed in a full bar, or had an entire place just not paying attention while we're doing improv.
Yeah, that was fun.
I've never felt silly. The only time I ever feel silly doing improv is when we're in like the basement of a theater and as a part of a class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When there's no audience, all of a sudden it's like, why am I doing this? I don't know. That's just me.
But Tim, Tim's a musical comedian. Like you guys don't improv so much. Like you do.
Well, I mean, we do. If somebody asks for a song that we don't know, we'll make it up.
So like when you guys rehearse, can you rehearse that shit? Do you ever rehearse those parts?
No, we never rehearse those parts.
Interesting. I mean,
we've had some turnover in our band makeup, and that actually makes it a little more difficult. Some of the band members that are gone were better at improvising music, but now it's like basically somebody asks for a song we don't know, and I'll just ask them, you know, tell me something about the song, and then I'll say, oh yeah, I know that song. It's in the key of G. Ball, can you give me a G? And
he'll
be like, well, what kind of is it? Is it like a bouncy? Is it a ballad? I'll be like, yeah, I think it's kind of, it's a ballad, isn't it?
And then practice. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just do it.
when people do musical improv well, it's maybe one of the more impressive things I've ever seen.
Well, and so, like, there are a few things that can happen when you're doing stand-up that are, like, I guess, improv moments, but mostly it's hecklers, right? Like,
I mean, it's more like, hecklers is one thing, but it's more like crowd work if something happens in the moment that you want to address as a performer. Getting heckled is not something that happens very often.
Yeah.
And if you're at a good place, they'll shut it down for you immediately. Because it's never a good thing. But crowd work or riffing on something, or sometimes, you know, you want to talk about the room or just whatever. Yeah, there's definitely an improv aspect to it, and some people do it more than others. Some people are better at it than others, for sure.
I got to back up to something you said earlier, just because, you know, you talked about, you know, comedians having this reputation of being, you know, narcissistic and self-absorbed. Mm. And it's like every comedian I know is filled with self-loathing. It's like the most inaccurate assessment of stand-up comedians.
Well, it's kind of narcissistic.
Narcissistic
and being self-absorbed is not the same thing as having a high self-esteem. Those are two different concepts, and you're totally right. a lot of comedians are full of self-loathing, and they have their own issues about self-esteem.
90%. Like, I think it's more rare to have a comedian who doesn't hate themselves, or at least can't do a solid 10 minutes on all the reasons they're a piece of shit. Right?
I think I'm pretty great.
You're the outlier.
I mean,
I don't really feel that way.
I can't speak for every comedian, but I definitely, it's very easy to start a career with self-deprecating humor. It's a very easy place to start. We all have our insecurities, and joking about them is very cathartic.
Yeah.
Especially when you get people, you can acknowledge these things that you don't like about yourself, you can get a laugh from it. But like, I like to think that's like level one or whatever.
Yeah.
Stand up. And then once you get past that, maybe you can find something better to talk about. And then I'm not putting down self-deprecation, because there's huge names that still do it. I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. But I think those two ideas are not mutually exclusive, though, of being self-absorbed and hating what you're absorbed with.
Yeah, I totally feel like, yeah, most of the time, and we see a lot of people's first stand-up because Tim's part of a theater group that does a lot.
You hate yourself?
No. Tim's part of the director of a theater group that really supports a lot of like new and burgeoning comedy artists. And one of the things they do is they have this show called Fearless Lab where like anyone can do anything. Right. So you get a lot of people doing stand-up for the first time there, and you would see people get up and do
improv for the first time.
Yeah,
it's amazing
yeah.
how many people have stand-up on their bucket list, which right? I never thought of
it
that way.
It's true, though. Like, a lot of people will be like, I finally did the thing I want. I've always said I would do stand-up. And
it's the weirdest thing, because I've never wanted to do it.
Yeah, but like, their thing usually is for that first time is to stand up and be like, hey, everybody, as you can see, I'm negative thing.
So
let me
funny,
tell you all the people who used to say negative things.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, right? I know what you're thinking. I bet blah, 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 blah.
I was like this and this. I'm like, no one was thinking that.
Yeah, and I can even like I'll even admit my first stand up thing I did something like that. I think my joke was something like I bet you're thinking that girl has a uterus and you're right. Like it was just a weird like.
It's a perfectly natural place to start.
It's super.
You start in on yourself
because it's the first time for most people, even if you are a performer, that you've stood up somewhere and you're the focus.
Yeah,
that's it. Just you are the focus. Nothing around you. You're not telling a story or anything. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. How's the scene in Pittsburgh?
It's good. It's getting better. When I started about 6 years ago, the independent scene was kind of like just kind of becoming more of a thing. And in that past 6 years, it's gotten pretty impressive. Now we have two comedy festivals, and we have two independent comedy theaters, and we have a few other venues that are really supportive of comedy. And of course, there's a lot of like young talent that I have high hopes for.
How is the atheist community?
I couldn't tell you.
There's no such thing.
Wait,
there is actually.
No, I know.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you're being facetious. I do know that there are people who gather as atheists, but I couldn't be less interested.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's just something to always. It's always interesting to me. I think that sometimes like good theater and comedy scenes and like other counterculture kind of stuff like.
Most of the comedians I know are atheists. I mean, the comedian who isn't an atheist, I'm like, and I want not to know you a little
bit. Yeah,
I found that to be. We've had that conversation with a few other comedians that have been on our podcast. It's like the comedy community, especially the stand-up community, is really heavily, certainly non-religious, but I think even beyond that, heavily atheist. I mean, there are some Christian comedians out there, and you watch them and it's kind of like, and they're so much of their thing is being Christians,
mm-hmm.
And most of the time, if I find stuff on YouTube, they're like doing stuff in front of church groups.
They're
on a stage in a mega church doing their comedy routine.
Oh, yeah.
I have a good buddy in Pittsburgh who is one of the best comedians in Pittsburgh, hands down. And he is he's like a real fleece wearing white dude.
Yeah.
And he believes in God, and he's just like a normal 32-year-old man with a wife and two kids.
He's one of
the absolute most talented comedians in Pittsburgh, and he has this amazing bit about atheism, about how he doesn't believe in it, and he understands what atheists don't like about religion, but that's just never been his experience. And he has this, I'm not going to repeat
awesome.
The bit, but like it's just fucking hilarious. It's one of my favorite bits I've ever seen, and I couldn't disagree with it more. But it's so well done. It's just so fucking funny.
That's great.
Pete Holmes
is
like a super white bread stand-up comedian guy who's Christian and like that's a
doesn't
part of his identity.
And
he doesn't swear, but like he's still pretty.
He doesn't
funny
swear.
Guy. Not really.
Apparently, that's his.
Like,
he tries not to.
I know he's not a super filthy comedian, but I feel like I was watching his show and it's pretty swears plenty.
Maybe
but
I'm wrong. Maybe I'm thinking.
I could also. Be
I might
very
be conflating
wrong.
Him with the character he was playing too on the show
Crashing.
About him that was like an autobiographical show he did. But that's super interesting. Well, listeners, if you're thinking about moving, it sounds like Pittsburgh wouldn't be too bad for those
of you
like atheism and comedy.
Don't tell anyone how great Pittsburgh is. I'm tired of the articles of being
Pittsburgh
like
sucks,
the
y'all.
Top
don't,
10 places to
no.
live in the country, because as soon as those articles come out, it's going to get too fucking expensive.
Yeah, right.
And all you people are going to ruin why it's so good to live
you
there.
You heard it here first. Pittsburgh's the fucking worst.
It's terrible.
Don't go there.
It's the worst fucking place ever.
Full of fundy Christians and people who hate laughing.
So
the neighborhood we're in right now is like the perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I grew up just like a mile east of here, and like the McDonald's across the street used to be 20 feet further from the curb and used to be like crust punks from like 50 feet deep in that like spare changing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was a place to spare.
There's a bus stop there. There's lots of spare changing. Lots of hanging out. Good place to buy a little pot maybe. And like this neighborhood wasn't what it is now. Mm-hmm. It's super gentrified because of it's a great place to live. There's artists and stuff. And over the last 20 years, it's been
$3,000 artist lofts that artists can't afford that you can live in and pretend that you're an artist.
Totally.
Yeah, just make sure you move in with an easel and some paint. Nobody fucking cares.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. This has been great. I think we should do five questions, though.
Five questions.
We can start us off with five questions.
Sure. What's a conspiracy theory that you find interesting or compelling?
The idea that people think voting matters.
oh, shit, I love that.
That's not really a conspiracy. I just think it's absolutely true. it's so funny. I was just having a discussion. I started seeing a woman in Pittsburgh right before I left for tour, and we've been talking every day on the phone, and we're talking about the riots or whatever.
The dumpster fire.
The Nazi bullshit. Yeah. And she was saying, we're just talking about voting and Trump and blah, 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 and how Trump is like the worst case scenario, but like I still truly believe that voting does not matter. But about how like I would never in a million years, if I ever were to vote, I would never vote for somebody who said publicly they believed in God ever. I would never want to have someone
so you really
in the country.
Then can't vote for anybody.
No, yeah. I mean, I understand. Yeah. But I'm saying until someone went up there and was like, this is ridiculous that we still say God bless America.
That we have to, otherwise.
And it's on our fucking money. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
This is absolutely fucking ridiculous. I mean, there's the many reasons why I don't think voting is very valid. And I honestly think that like the fact that Trump was elected, and although if you look at the Electoral College, which is a scam, if that thing didn't exist, we would not have had a Republican president since the first George Bush. Like it's all been Democratic. It's
all the fucking like redistricting and
the fact. I mean, it's so clear that it's such a scam voting and how we're being manipulated. And even the people who know that and still vote is almost more upsetting to me than the people who won't acknowledge it. They're like, yeah, but I still feel like I need to vote. Like, but it's not helping. It's not good. And I know that a lot of people like are very against me on this, and that's totally fine. But like, I totally believe I'm very Carlin-esque in this. Like, I think voting is complete. What we shuffle around every 4 years could not matter less. And this country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. And voting is just something we do to keep the masses to feel better about themselves.
It's interesting. Voting is bread and circuses. I kind of I dig that theory. All right.
I don't agree, but it's cool. I appreciate it.
It would be a very long conversation as to why I agree and disagree.
That's fair.
So
I'm willing to concede that voting an individual vote matters very little, and voting does largely provide the illusion of
control,
you having a say, and really, there are a lot more effective ways to make the world a better place if that's your primary concern than voting.
I agree to that. That's my basic premise for sure. Yeah. I think there's better things that anyone could be doing.
Sure.
Word. Tim, question two.
What's your perfect 2-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
Oh man, I forgot this question was going to be asked.
So you can't go to Mars. It's not okay. It'll take longer than 2 weeks.
I spent a long time as a chef, and there's still a huge part of me who really cares deeply about food and good food. I'd probably go to Europe and just bounce around like 3-star Michelin restaurants.
Nice.
And just go like just completely be the fat, disgusting American pig that I am, but in a very like nice French and Italian Spanish restaurants. Yeah, that awesome. Would probably just bounce around Europe and eat.
I like that. Question three is what is a book or movie that changed your life?
This is so funny because reminded the place I'm staying in Minneapolis, the Wi-Fi network is Yossarian Lives, which anyone know the reference?
I don't.
No.
It's Catch-22.
Okay.
The main character of Catch-22 is Yossarian.
And, I haven't read that in so long.
Obviously, the premise of the book is that you have to fly so many missions to get out of the Air Force, but as soon as you get close to your number, they keep upping it, so you can never get out of the Air Force. That's where the term Catch-22 comes. It's called Catch-22 or whatever. And that book, I remember reading that book in high school, and that book is all about the absurdity of government, the absurdity of war, the absurdity of military, and how you're just completely getting fucked all the time, which is kind of what I just talked about in the first one.
Yeah.
So that book, I remember reading that book and that being the first like novel that isn't necessarily comedy, but I remember laughing out loud at the book a bunch of times and thinking it was so fucking funny. And then I forget the pilot's name, but the guy who kept crashing on purpose, and then he would come back and they would make fun of him for crashing his plane. But what he was doing was learning how to survive at sea so he could escape the military, so he could get out of the Catch-22.
Fuck, I haven't read that in so long.
It was just, I mean, the book just, like, if you can get through the metaphors of the book are just so fucking brilliant and spot on.
Yeah,
and really,
Vonnegut's amazing.
And really shaped. It was Joseph Heller.
Motherfucker! Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Vonnegut is also amazing. You weren't wrong.
I was thinking of Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah,
I was so embarrassed.
Definitely same genre, same thought process, for sure. But that book, along with many other books of the genre, really like shaped the way that I think and feel about a lot of things.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. Nate, question 4.
What's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
Ooh. Oh, God. I don't know if I have a fucking answer for this. I need some guidance.
Everybody's here's the thing.
Cool.
Here's the thing.
You guys can't see him, but he's
like,
pretty fucking cool.
I guess it depends on how you define geeky. I definitely have a Harry Potter tattoo that I gave to myself on Easter Sunday when I was 30.
That's fucking
yeah, that's pretty
geeky.
Right there. Yeah.
I guess that's popped in my head. Yeah, I was dating a woman, and we both gave ourselves Harry Potter stick and pokes on Easter. We were just like being atheists, not doing anything else on Easter Sunday.
What is it? What's your stick and poke Harry Potter tattoo?
It's on my leg. Yeah. I have to take my pants down, but it's the Deathly Hallows.
Nice.
Symbol.
Yeah.
Easy geometry.
Yeah.
So quick story, just because it's funny and because it relates. Molly, different Molly, Molly Zupan, who's in my band, was out at the Renaissance Festival setting up her trailer this weekend.
Yeah.
And there was a hornet that came up and landed on her, so she freaked out and ran away from it, tripped, and fell and scratched up her leg, which I was like, see, that's way worse than just getting stung, right? And her leg is scratched up in a perfect Harry Potter Z.
like
the lightning bolt.
The woman who lived.
Exactly.
Nice.
I made that joke, and then she came over to our house to rehearse that night, and my kids made the same joke. So anyway.
That's great.
The hornet who must not be named.
Yeah, right?
All right. So question number 5 is what is your favorite hangover cure?
Not drinking in the first place. That's a cop-out.
No, that's the one I use.
You don't drink ever.
I know. So, yeah, but it's valid.
A lot of regret and eating and bed rest. I don't have one. I'd rarely get hungover.
Yeah.
So like I just like every time I do it, I cannot fucking believe I did this. I'm just mad. You know what cures it? Self anger. Just being mad that I fucking did it.
Burn it out with rage.
Like how many times?
A hangover cure. So a hangover is your hangover cure. You have a hangover.
Like, how the fuck did I let that happen?
And then you don't do it.
I try to Ron Swanson and just eat a lot of food before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I do anyway. drunk or not, but I just try to eat a lot of meat or pancakes before I go to bed.
Something greasy.
What about meat and pancakes? Can you do that?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Like pancakes and bacon, dude.
I know. Or like pigs in a blanket.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. The pork chops, steak, not in the chicken so much, but you can definitely do that. definitely like sausage or breakfast meats. But you pancakes with eggs and steak all together in one bite is the best. It's
that
so good.
Good.
That
this is getting back to your perfect vacation.
Yeah.
So where can people find you online or anything like that? Twitter, anything?
I have so much.
Nice.
You can find me, John Dick Winters, on everything, on all the social medias. And then you can I run a collective in Pittsburgh called Race to the Coffin Comedy. I run a comedy festival in Pittsburgh called Burning Bridges Festival. And then, very excited about this. It hasn't launched yet, but we have started recording episodes. I'm starting a podcast with my daughters.
Nice.
Called Teenage Wasteland. That's where we have candid discussions about adult topics, but from a teenager's perspective. We're talking about like the cliche things that parents don't like to talk to their kids about, like sex and that kind of stuff. We're also talking about stuff that parents don't really even think about talking to their kids about things like overpopulation, things like the food crisis, and the militarization of the police force, and all these things that are very, very important.
Jesus, I talked to my 13-year-old about this.
This is great.
You do?
Oh, I've been talking to my kids about this stuff since they were old enough to understand it.
Great. Yeah. That's great, but you and I are in the minority.
Oh, I know.
But then this podcast is created out of having just the conversations like that over the years.
So people want to shield their kids from the evils of the world.
My oldest child, I mean, I've told this story on the podcast before, but my oldest child, who's 17 now, he was in Cub Scouts. So he was about like 8 or 9 at the time. And one of the things that you had to do, like to earn the badge,
be a fucking nerd.
To earn the bear badge, to be a fucking nerd, is to have a conversation about God.
Ooh.
And I'm like, I don't know how to do this. Both me and my wife are atheists.
We can have a conversation about how there is one.
Well, no. And so I sat down and said, we have to have this conversation about this. And your mom and I are both atheists. We don't believe God exists. And he's like, yeah, I don't either. I'm like, done.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's so funny. You bring up such a good point, and I'm sure that you probably haven't done this because you seem like a logical person. But like this concept, there's like the idea of the talk, the one big talk about this subject or that subject is so absurd.
It is ridiculous.
When in reality,
like you can just be done with it now.
Yeah. Well, that, or you put so much pressure on like talking to your kids about sex or whatever. And when the reality is, you just talk to them always about everything.
It's 5,000 little talks.
Yeah. And so many parents don't get that. And I'm just like, how the fuck do you not get that?
Talk to your kids like they're people.
And it just comes up.
Yep.
It just comes up.
It sounds
just
like a great podcast, and I wish I'd thought it up first.
It's not a talk.
Steal it. I already got my
Yeah, he's out. All right, so Teenage Wasteland podcast coming soon. Race to the Coffin Comedy Collective. Burning Bridges Festival, and John Dick Winter's everywhere.
Yeah,
nice, John. Thank you so much. Thanks, it was a super pleasure to have you on.
I really appreciate it.
Good luck with the rest of your tour.
Yeah, thanks.
And thanks, guys. Yeah. This has been Geeks Without God. Thanks so much for listening to us. You can also find us everywhere as Geeks Without God,
except Instagram because we don't take fucking pictures.
Fuck Instagram, dude. We're not doing that. Yeah. I don't know what you would want to see pictures of.
We're a podcast.
Yeah,
we're all pretty
ugly.
You don't take pictures of radio.
I got it. Every single picture, one picture a day, it's a picture of not God.
Yeah.
Just like here's. Sure, that's not God.
This car was not designed by God.
We've got faces for radio and pictures of not God.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
That's
funny. Yeah, thanks, guys. We'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
That's so funny.
Man, that guy was like so cool.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Maybe it's a better thing that you're not like playing to people that you're just going to piss off. Go find an audience that wants to hear you.